gentlemen, welcome to the most electrifying must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Welcome to FFC. I am your host, the ghost of the East Coast, Damian Ellinghouse, accompanied, as always, by good friend and lover of old men bleeding when they shouldn't and doing things they shouldn't, Ryan Doyle.
Hey, Rick, I know you're dying in the ring, but what I'm dying about here is the good folks at Blue Chew. Chat me up about that.
What's funny is the sentence I said could apply to multiple situations in the wrestling world as of the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you pretty much described how I like lemon parties, so thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you haven't yet heard our esteemed takes on the great things happening in the wrestling world. And that is what we are here to do today, because ding dong, the Vince is dead. Long live the game.
We've been talking about this like every episode for fucking 2 years. We're not prepared for this, dude.
No, we are not.
We had a little fucking glass cabinet right here.
Yep.
With what?
With I don't know. Nothing.
Fuck, man.
Glass case of emotions, but nothing to show for it. So, yeah. So we gotta talk about some stuff. There's stuff happening all over the place. There's just stuff as far as the eye can see. Just, you look to the north and there's stuff. You look to the south and there's stuff. You look to the west, stuff. You look to the east, nothing. East is a government conspiracy.
There is no east.
There is no east. We've always been at war with Eurasia. All right, so without further ado, let's get straight into the stuff. I'm trying really hard to say, to not say let's get into it like every other white guy with a podcast. So this is my first attempt. Copyright. Cannot play this. This will be muted.
Goodbye.
By the way, if you hear what sounds like rhythmic tribal drumming in the background, fear not. It is not the demon Finn Balor coming to haunt you all through your ears. It's just my beautiful Astoria Queens being ripped apart brick by brick, piece of cement by piece of cement.
I heard there's some are they trying to put some fancy schmancy Saudi billionaire apartments in Astoria?
Well, it didn't work.
You guys fought that?
Apparently, it didn't work.
Good for you.
Beautiful stuff. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Only Bear Burgers and Greek taverns in this.
Exactly.
Town.
Exactly. You know, Bear Burger started in Astoria too.
Really? Oh, is that the original location?
That's the one right by me. Is the original location?
Oh, look at that. That's awesome.
All right. Well, Ryan, what's there to consume tonight?
My dad drank my beer, man. He drank it. He probably didn't even like it either. He's like, I saw this Sierra Nevada in the fridge, so I drank it. So I've pledged multi-surface.
You got pledged multi-surface. All right.
To drown out my sorrows that Papa's gone.
In this case, the multi-surface is your larynx and your gums and your tongue.
Yes.
And your stomach lining.
Yep, but it takes care of granite and electronic.
And you won't remember the episode or the last week.
You're
so
in for a dandy.
Lucky us.
This one's about, we got Kurt Angle.
just sounding like you're doing a Scott Steiner impersonation the whole time.
Get ready for an 8-hour delve into Doink the Clown.
He's fat! I didn't get home till 7:20, so I've got an entire 4-pack of Braven Brooklyn Bushwick Pilsner, which is bold and crafty, and we're just gonna see.
It kind of looks like the Doyle sigil.
The Doyle sigil. That's exactly what
the
it is.
Coat of arms.
That's exactly what it is, and I bought it for that reason. I was like, this looks suspiciously like the Doyle coat of arms, mm-hmm. And I was like, I have to get this for me. So we're just going to see. We're just going to see how many of these get through today.
All right. Yeah, I'm very, very disappointed in myself. This should be a drinking momentous occasion. But is he really gone? Is Vince really gone?
Yes.
Is Ric Flair really dead?
Yes. The answer to both of those questions are yes.
Yes. Okay.
Right. End of the episode. All right. Well, I don't know. Uncork your pledge or turn it off of lock.
I have some water here. So.
There you go. That's nice.
All right.
That's
we nice. Cheers. Yeah. Vince is gone. Yeah. How is it?
Nice, simple, crisp Pilsner. I've been way into Pilsners as of late. Because I really can't deal with IPAs right now. It's nothing against them. I just can't. I'm over it right now.
After 10 years, you know what, man? I've been feeling the same thing.
And even I love sours, but I don't really want to drink a sour all that often right now.
I love finding good imitations of American macro beer now. So Pilsner, for example.
Yeah.
It's like a non-shitty Budweiser.
Yeah, I'm all about the Ebb's regular beer. Regular beer is Duclos.
Okay.
It's like their...
Some sour unicorn farts or whatever the fuck.
It's their macro microbrew.
Okay.
It describes itself as a regular beer to drink regularly.
For a regular man.
I've just been more into Pilsners. Long live the Czech.
Nice. Nice.
All right. Well, look, straight to the point, right? Unless you've been living under a rock, in which case this is not the right podcast to listen to, because why are you here? Vincent Kennedy McMahon announced his retirement gracefully out of nowhere. It was precipitated by nothing and nobody saw it coming. There were no warning signs. And everybody was really sad about it.
A well-earned retirement. Absolutely. Congratulations, Vince.
Yeah, yay.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you did it. Yeah. No, of course, Vince McMahon was mercilessly shoved into retirement by the board and company that he stole from his dad. And because he paid a lot of money to not that many people, because he was touching the wrong people's no-no places in times when he shouldn't have and when he was not given the permission to do so, to the tune of $12 million that we know of. $12 million that we know of. Listen, man, I don't care how famous you are. If you're paying somebody $4 million to not talk about fucking you, it wasn't just an affair. It wasn't just a consensual, especially because Vince and Linda haven't been married since the 1940s. So
Chris Jericho out here is they had a loving relationship.
Yes, yes.
It's all legal.
Yes, I'm sure they love each other and the idea of being married to each other as a shelter.
Oh, my fucking God. Why? He shat where he ate. He, pulled, the classic, fucking, I have to bang the girls here. This is the only bastion of freedom I have left.
Yes.
I could theoretically get any woman on Earth, but I have to get them a corporate. It's a power move, damn it.
And of course, look, here's the deal. We are not shy about our qualms with WWE, but more to the point, I'm not interested in eulogizing a sex pest, and let's call him what he is. He's a sex pest. And but Vince was a bad person before any of this. Plenty of corroborated things to show you that Vince McMahon was at best a ruthless cutthroat sociopath who only really gave a shit about you based on what you could bring to the table, and who, like most rich people, would occasionally have a soft spot and do nice things and whatever. But that's the extent of what I'm going to say about him as a good person. I'm sure Steph and Shane's kids, I'm sure they love Grandpappy, and I'm sure he's got plenty of people that love him, but he's a sex pest, and he was a bad person before, and he's a bad person now.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to eulogize him like he's fucking your great uncle or something. I mean, you have to view him like Thomas Edison, you know? Thomas Edison gave you something that you use every day, you talk about every day. Yet Vince gave us that.
And he also stole it from someone else, which is a great, great metaphor for what Vince did.
Well, that's the American way, to steal it and make money off of it.
I think the thing that I will take the most umbrage from is like the type of shit that you're hearing from Triple H right now. Triple H has basically assumed creative duties as head of creative, while Stephanie and Nick Khan are co-CEOs, with Nick Khan handling essentially CFO duties and business duties, and Stephanie kind of handling the day-to-day wrestling business stuff, which will, I'm sure Nick Khan's not going to be particularly happy about sharing the spotlight, nor do I imagine Stephanie is, but it will probably work out, at least in the short to midterm. Nick Khan clearly knows what he's doing when it comes to running a business, and Stephanie has been in the business long enough to, I think, have earned that trust.
I wonder how much Nick Khan actually gives a shit about the product versus
I don't think he cares.
No, so that says, I don't think the relationship's going to be fine. As long as he's signing those, getting those checks signed and fucking trailblazing into new territory to new arenas and shit like that, he doesn't care about the product.
Well, it's more the idea that, like, It will require Nick Khan to also sign off on maybe expenditures that he would see as unnecessary, that perhaps Stephanie would be looking at from like a wrestling business standpoint. Yeah. But like, this is all like, who fucking knows how this is going to work out. But something that I do take umbrage with, because here's the deal, right? If you want to argue that Vince McMahon like took wrestling from where it was and turned it into a global phenomenon, then like, sure, I don't really have an argument. You know, at the very least, he built WWE into something that no other wrestling business probably ever had any hope of being. And like, that's fine. You can say that. However, Triple H went on record as saying, like, prior to Vince, wrestling was something that you did in like tiny bars, which is like, that's when it got annoying, because first off, wrestling in Japan and literally anywhere that's not America was doing just fine without Vince McMahon sticking his nose in it. And also, let's not forget that prior to Vince McMahon doing anything, his father was selling out MSG, the Georgia Dome was being sold out, the Memphis area was huge. Like, the territories were doing fine, and people like Lou Thesz and Vern Gagne and Hulk Hogan, and like, these people existed prior to Vince McMahon. Wrestling was certainly not some, like, it wasn't in carnivals when Vince McMahon took over and suddenly made it big. And he wasn't even the biggest person at his era. He won the war.
I think Triple H should have fleshed out that comment a little more. You know, even people like Gorgeous George influenced Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And the styling that he did. What Triple H is correct upon is that wrestling was a very much a carny thing when Vince took over. To where now, like, there's multi-million dollar training facilities. Again, not necessarily Vince's idea, but his ideas allowed it to happen, made wrestling a weekly arena product. You know, I have fucking corny screaming in the back. Sold out fucking Memphis 3,000 goddamn times. No, listen, he's wrong in that statement. It didn't go from circus catches can wrestling to MSG. There was very much some time in between.
That's my only point. I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, Vince McMahon had a massive impact on the wrestling world, and even if you want to say like Vince McMahon was the most important person in American wrestling, like, sure, that's fine. I can understand the argument, and I don't really think you'll get a ton of it's just, you know, like I said, like, did Japan just not exist? Did those people just not matter?
Here's like, my question though: without Vince being a ruthless son of a bitch and doing what he did, are we sitting here today talking about a current wrestling product?
I mean, it's hard to know what, you know, the great what if, right? What if Turner wins the Monday Night Wars and it's WCW? Look, at the end of the day, we say all the time, like, we're not going to be standing for billionaires. So this isn't exactly like a bad guy, evil Vince mm-hmm. versus all the like good menches of wrestling that were just fighting. Like, everybody was a piece of shit.
Yeah, I think it's just a fucking the victors.
Yeah, you write history. You know? Like, let's not pretend that like Turner is some great fucking bastion of morality, and like, you know, Bill Watts and Jerry Lawler and everybody was just good, great people that never did anything wrong.
Also, like, you have to understand like his audience that he's speaking to in that clip. Like, it would be cool if Logan Paul like starts shouting out his favorite like AWA matches, but he has no context on that. Yeah, sure, yeah, okay, you know. It's created wrestling.
Yeah, no, yeah, like, so like I said, and I understand that it's really just getting worked by the guy who's literally the, like, the son-in-law and all that, but that it's mm-hmm. more just, I always get annoyed that we allow WWE to get away with this, like, revisionist history because it is what it is.
Especially a week after shit went down, you know, but, like, Triple H isn't going to separate that shit from himself.
No, no,
like,
no, of course not. And, you know...
Vince is still going to get his laurels.
And something that maybe it's wrong to say it bothers me, but like it's worth mentioning that, like, you know, so Bryan Danielson has come out and plenty of people have come out, but like Bryan Danielson, probably the other big one, is talking about how they love Vince and Vince made mistakes and whatever. And I'm not here to tell people what they should and shouldn't feel about their family or how they should or shouldn't feel about somebody that they feel like gave them their career or whatever. That's not really for me to judge. All I will really say is I'm not here for being like, oh, Vince made a mistake, or like, oh, Vince, like, you know, he got forced out for, like, I'm not here for any of that. Vince was shady as fuck before this, and the best case scenario you can say is that he defrauded investors. Like, that's the best case. That's like the best spin you can make on this. So he's still like a shitty cutthroat businessman at best.
Right.
And that's ignoring the human cost. Like,
you're not viewing for the respective of people. Don't give a shit.
No, dude. Of course. You know? Of course. So
know,
like
look, I, you know, Kevin Nash, I think, explained it somewhat very well when he said, look, this guy gave me a good start. I know Vince from the context of hanging out with him. That's all I know. That's all I have to go by. You know, but it's hard to say. I mean, it's silly to defend. Like, Vince, here's the problem. Vince doesn't need defending.
Exactly.
The guy, he's a billionaire. He's going to spend the remaining portion of his days, hopefully, you know, kicking back somewhere in Greenwich.
No,
but
no, he will not be doing that.
He's not going to jail.
I'm not saying he's going in jail, but he's not just going to be kicking back doing whatever. He's
all right.
Still,
so let's go to the next part of the conversation.
Yeah. So bottom line is really just like, whatever you wanna give him his flowers for what he did with wrestling. You're going to get a lot of opinions, but whatever. But just, I'm not here for the like, Vince did nothing wrong or like any of that. That's all I really care about. And like you said, like, it's weird to defend like this.
Here's where I'll get pissed off at. Like, I think it was that day Regal like praised Vince and gave him his flowers, and then the shit, like, Vince left later in the night and Regal was just like, oh, I'm terribly sorry. It's like, no, dude, just fucking stick with what you gotta say. Like,
say what you said.
There's no tiptoeing. Like, you know what Vince is, so like, just don't tiptoe about
that's,
it.
That's the thing. It's not like it suddenly came out that like Vince was had like a dungeon full of underage girls that he was torturing. Like, he was doing shit that I have to think everybody was surface level aware of, if they were even kind of close to his circle. So like,
right? I mean, come on.
So whatever. Anyway, so yes, the context of this podcast anyway, the important thing is, what does this mean for wrestling at large? The thing is, this is truly, truly uncharted territory, because, well, this is the first time since 1940 something that a person named Vincent McMahon has not been in wrestling.
That's crazy to think about.
Like, the last time there was no Vincent McMahon in wrestling, like World War II was happening. So that's
isn't it crazy how some things are common. World War III, no Vince McMahon in wrestling.
Yeah, I would think that this is
really I told something. You should have kept me around, damn it.
He was the only thing keeping everybody in check. Ukraine happened because he slipped. So yeah, and obviously you can't say it's the first time without a McMahon because Stephanie is CEO. But point being, like, Vince McMahon took over from his father, Vincent, for the WWF, right, in the 50s, 60s, and then he goes from there. So this is the first time since the late 1960s where Vince is not involved in wrestling, which means that we are officially in a place that wrestling, modern day wrestling, has never seen, which is a world where Vince McMahon is not leading the biggest wrestling company in the world. Maybe you can say like 1990s if you want to say WCW, that's fine. Either way, you're talking about something that hasn't even been thought of in 30 years and something that hasn't functionally happened in 50. So what does that mean for the landscape? As for WWE, I think anybody expecting it to be like a massive difference is probably in for a surprise. Like, you're not suddenly going to get NXT Black and Gold, but on the main roster. You're not going to suddenly get a totally different product. You're not going to suddenly get rid of Pritchard and Dunn that quickly, that easily. And it's still, you know, a corporate conglomerate. It's still like a massive multi-billion-dollar company that does what it does. However, if SummerSlam was any indication and like the Raws proceeding and following it, we are in for a potentially seismic shift, if not necessarily in presentation, in like substance. And that is significant, for sure.
That's all you want.
Because
that's all we've been clamoring about for the last couple of years is just substance.
Yeah.
We're fine. We're fine with the Ezekiel storylines. We're fine with, you know, some people getting pushed over looks versus talent. Just give us substance, man.
We just want, yeah, all wrestling fans want. I guess I shouldn't speak for every wrestling fan because some people are obviously super happy with what WWE has been doing. Some people only watch for the glitz and glamour, and I'm not here to judge. Like, you like wrestling for what you get out of it, and it's not my place to tell you whether you're wrong for that. I try to be pretty clear that when I hate things, when I think things are fucking trash, like, it doesn't mean that that's gospel, obviously. But
I think we've given WWE praise where it deserves to be praised, but I don't think it's crazy to think that the overall lens of WWE currently or before 2 weeks ago was shit needs to get an injection of something.
Yes, that's probably the big thing, is like, it's been a really long time since WWE has felt fresh. And that's what happens when the same person runs a company for 50 years. Like, Vince was only ever going to develop or change or progress so much. Like, at the end of the day, what you saw in WWE, what you're still seeing, is his fingerprints. It's what he felt mattered most to wrestling. And he's still, like, I think he's still majority stock owner. So if you think he's going to suddenly have no input on this company that has been everything in his life, you're out of your mind. So, but at the end of the day, Triple H doesn't have to follow these rules. Stephanie doesn't have to follow these things. And Vince can't do much more than strongly suggest, or, you know, like, you're going to see things with Vince's fingerprints in it probably forever, for as long as WWE exists, because the two are synonymous. One doesn't exist without the other. But I think you've already seen some decisions showing that clearly Triple H is going to start implementing his vision. And results are tentatively promising. SummerSlam was a pretty good event. There weren't that many changes from what I understand, but like Becky's face turn, Bayley coming out with Dakota Kai, who wasn't even signed, who had gotten released, and Io Shirai, and then Becky coming up to Bianca's corner. Very, very, I'm not saying it's something Vince would have never done, but
no way in hell is he going to get someone who was in contractual limbo to be a part of a main roster,
yes,
female stable.
Absolutely.
So you can tell that was a Triple H move.
Similarly, like, Becky turning in that moment and not staying heel, like, the storyline is naturally that she should have lost her mind and become a face again, but you thought maybe it'd be a slow climb, maybe it'd be whatever, but...
Well, I think because she got hurt, they were just like, all right, just be a face, and, you know, when you come back, we'll deal with it. So I'm curious to see what they would have done if she didn't get hurt. But Ronda Rousey went heel, so there is also, I think, something that Vince was very hesitant on. Where, you know, I mean, Triple H is like, fuck it, man, who cares?
Like, and she went, like, full heel, which I think I've been saying for a while, Ronda worked better as a heel. Now, I don't really want to see, like, you know, misexpose the business, not because, like, she violated some cardinal rule, but because you can only break the illusion so much before it's like, okay, now I don't care. Like, I have to be able to suspend my disbelief enough to be, yes, obviously wrestling is not real. Yes, obviously wrestling is not real. Yes, obviously wrestling is not real. But, like, I don't watch wrestling because I think it's real. I watch it because it's a TV show and I think it's fun. If you were watching fucking, like, Daredevil and every 2 seconds, what's his face? Matt Murdock is looking at the fucking camera and being like, I'm an actor. I'm Charlie Cox. I am not this character.
I'm not blind.
Like, this is me talking. This isn't Daredevil talking to Kingpin. This is Charlie Cox talking to Vincent D'Onofrio, because I'm going to kick your ass like you'd hate the show. So
you made a good point, though. It's WWE. Presumably Vince was still riding high on Ronda being that MMA star that sold out on a headlining female only roster, female only card on Evolution, and you know, they still want, but she's not that person anymore.
I don't know that she was ever that person. Like, she putting her at the main event, fine.
There was definitely some crittiness to her coming in and being like, you know, this is the biggest female talent that we're gonna get that is mainstream exposed.
Yeah,
but you're past that. It's 3 years later. Everybody knows. I mean, shit, she's probably spent more time in WWE now than UFC, you know what I mean?
That's an interesting question. I wonder.
At the top, she was only really on the top of UFC for like 2 years.
Yeah, she was the first female UFC champion in 2012. It was like 4 years, so yeah, you're right. We are definitely coming up to that point. And you know what? She signed 2017. So you're right. She has now been in WWE, if you're counting hiatuses, longer than UFC.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, she's not really that person anymore. She's a WWE superstar now. So it's time to start treating her like one. I think for her own benefit too. So we'll see.
And also, like, my big thing is really she doesn't come across as a natural face. I'm not saying that's because she's a bad person, although, you know, don't love the fact that Ronda Rousey said you should do your research about Sandy Hook. Don't really love some of that stuff, but look, you're presenting her as the baddest woman on the planet, so let her go be the baddest woman on the planet. That's really what you want out of her, and it worked. It was simple. You know, she ragdolls Liv for 5 minutes, gets pinned on a technicality, makes Liv tap, and then attacks a referee. Perfect. Simple. Very, very simple classic heel tactics. And you're like, oh, well, she's a shitty loser. Boo. You get Liv over without her looking like a fucking weakling. It's an interesting way to book it. And now you've got Liv who gets to try to have a proper reign. You were able to book a Liv Morgan Ronda Rousey match in such a way where Liv comes across looking tough, if nothing else, and gutsy. Ronda looks like a bully, and now Liv gets to have an actual title reign, and Ronda gets to go be a heel. It works. It worked. It works out. And Perfect. That is the simple type of storytelling you're ever looking for. You just want to be able to, like, look at a match and look at a feud and be like, sure, that makes sense for the most part, and I enjoyed watching that. And that's, I think, largely what you got from SummerSlam right down to the main event, which was, like, one of the biggest spectacles I've ever seen, and really recaptured that spirit of 2016 between Brock and Roman. Like, this helped solidify, not that either of them needed it, but Brock obviously comes out looking like $10 million looking like the fucking toughest, scariest dude in the world. He fucking rode a tractor into a ring and lifted it. Roman flailing around like a comic book character. Roman looks like a badass too because he legitimately survived a lot. Paul Heyman gets his comeuppance. Austin Theory gets treated like an idiot for picking a dumb time to try to cash in. Like, simple. It works. I don't want to see that matchup ever again.
So did
but
he lose
that was
his cash in?
I don't think so. I mean, I didn't watch Raw.
And the bell didn't ring, right?
No, he brought a ref with him and was saying what he was going to do, but the ref never called it in because once he got there, he got leveled and it never fully cashed it in. So I think...
No, they did a great job with, nobody really wanted to see that match and they made people realize like, oh shit, I gotta watch this. He came out with a goddamn tractor. And SummerSlam is the perfect environment to do that in. I don't think you get away with that at any other. I mean, of course, like LOL WWE shit, but like WWE shit works at SummerSlam for some reason. Yep. I don't know.
No, and Brock, since coming back, has been a ton of fun. And everybody was super here for Roman initially, and everybody was here for Happy Brock or just like fucking silly Brock while still being a monster. We just wanted you've just sacrificed everyone to Roman, so the issue is now no longer really Roman's character. It's what the fuck are we doing with the bloodline? And nobody really wanted to see Brock as champion because you're pinning him against Roman when you're like, somebody else really should be doing that. But all we really wanted to see was a match where either of them do more than finishers, and that's what we got. Antics aplenty, and the big story of the night, Michael Cole sounded like a million fucking dollars. My God.
Yep, never doubted that.
Yeah, anybody that's been watching as long as we have, like, for me, I was telling my boss who's a wrestling fan, the four voices of wrestling for me are JR, King, Taz, and Michael Cole. Those are the people that make up my childhood. So I always enjoyed Cole. Sure, he was like maybe the least interesting, but I never thought he was bad. But, you know, you get enough fucking corporate trademarks shoved in your fucking ear and you're just like, say the thing, pal, say the thing. Just hearing him say WWE fans was like so refreshing. Because do you really need to brand the fans as the WWE universe? I always thought it was stupid. Or at the very least, if you're going to call them at, like, don't make that the only thing you say. The referee got a name, him screaming at the ref, you know, count faster, damn it. Like, it was so good. And I'm so excited to see Michael Cole, like, unleashed again.
Yeah, Pat helps him out significantly.
Oh, yeah, dude. He's never sounded like he's having more fun.
And of course, like, he's never going to fucking say this, but, like, you know, Michael Cole isn't a fucking rookie, dude. You know, I mean, he doesn't need a fucking 77-year-old man screaming in his ear.
He's a war journalist, goddammit.
That's right. Holy shit. He could do that shit with his eyes closed. If you want a good, like, there's not a lot of examples, but a great example of it is Live at the Budokan. Beast from the East, like 2014, something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Beast of the East, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Who is it? It's not... Who is the other person next to him? It's not Nigel McGuinness.
Why is it Corey?
No.
Is it someone not unusual?
Yeah, it was like... It's somebody that I don't think he was usually with. Beast in the East, 2015. It was Colin Saxton.
Saxton, okay. But I think Saxton, like, just started out at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just, like, a very relaxed Cole where you just got to see that he was, like, good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's just... Overall, because you can only spend so much time on WWE, the things remain to be seen, but... We're already seeing Tommaso Ciampa going over AJ Styles, getting a U.S. title shot. You're going to likely see Sasha and Naomi come back because their issue was Vince and his booking of the tag titles. And obviously, they've always had a good relation with Triple H. I don't expect Triple H to suddenly knock it out of the park. But look, NXT was the best thing going in WWE for a really good long while. And him and Shawn Michaels and Dusty are behind that. So... I think just having a fresh voice, just having a little bit more stability and not having somebody rip up the script, and just letting people, they, you know, some reports came out that they were letting people call the spots more at SummerSlam in the ring and improvising more and maybe not as many scripted promos is all you can ask for. So I think really the bigger question is not what will change about WWE, because the answer is we'll see. Probably not a ton presentation wise, but we'll see. What does this mean for AEW? Well, this means a whole hell of a lot. I'm not Mr. TV guy, but Raw popped an absolutely massive rating after SummerSlam, even bigger than, you know, people expected. And Logan Paul, who is also a terrible person, I just want to make sure that anytime we talk about Logan Paul, we remind everyone that he's a really terrible person.
He really gets it, though, dude.
Oh, yeah, he gets it. 100%. The man gets wrestling, and it's a match made in heaven. Between that and the main event and Brock and Roman's exposure and, you know, all the press surrounding Vince leaving, like, what this really means for AEW is it wasn't a war to begin with, but there was a while where most, if not most wrestling fans, like a large plurality, were like, AEW is where you want to watch good wrestling, WWE is the spectacle. And I don't know that that's going to be the case anymore, because they filled a niche that now WWE is very happy to also be in.
Mm-hmm.
So what does AEW do?
The era of go to AEW is over, you know? If Tony could somehow spin this into something like he realized this window that he had and grabbed as many people as possible before, obviously he didn't see fucking Vince getting canned, but
no,
I mean, like,
never.
Locking these guys in for the next 5 years at least, because you're already hearing the rumors, and who knows if this is some industry plant shit that everybody wants to come back to WWE.
Yeah.
Who knows? Tony's on notice, though, you know? I think they're always going to have the 900,000 to million people watching AEW.
Yeah,
Dynamite
a clear 900,000 minimum, really.
Which they're fine with. And they're not going to exceed that. You know, all the people you want in there are in there. So, which is fine. As long as Turner's happy with it, then fuck it. Who cares? Tony's going to be a little bit on notice now. He's not going to be able to get away with, you know, shitty gimmick matches, and this is a special Dynamite. Oh, wait, this next week is a special Dynamite. I think that, you know, he really had the freedom to just pretty much do whatever he wants. But now, like, listen, is Triple H isn't going to fight him.
Yeah.
And I think Triple H really wants to coexist with them. But he's going to be coming after the same people that he's coming after now.
Yep, 100%. And a lot of people that left WWE talk, you know, a lot of people that like left NXT or people that, you know, came up in that era, talk very highly about Triple H as a guy that ran things, and their issue was mostly main roster booking. It's not that there were people that didn't flame out in NXT, but it was just a totally different beast.
Which is completely fine. You know, if anything, it's going to probably help out Tony, because he doesn't have to spin these ex-WWE guys anymore. You know what I mean? He has to focus on some of his more own homegrown talent, somebody that the company found themselves. Because it was becoming a little bit like TNA in like 2005, 2006, where like everybody that just got let go from WWE was just going over there.
That said, I don't necessarily know that I would say I think goated AEW is over. AEW being, like, to many wrestling fans, the clear-cut best wrestling you can watch on TV, that's mm-hmm. probably over. Because at minimum, canning or limiting Kevin Dunn's influence on production and giving, like, a more steady camera and, like, you know, better angle work and just like better camera work and presentation in general for a TV product, and less forced sounding promos or in-ring action, and probably more wrestling, is going to mean that you're really, if you're watching AEW over WWE, then aside from like loyalty, whatever, you're mainly doing it because they look totally different. You like the kind of more, you know, gritty feel of AEW versus like the bright lights of WWE. I think that AEW hit a lull. Their booking has been a little weird for a couple months now. They obviously know how to hit home runs in pay-per-view. But look, no Kenny Omega. No Adam Cole, baby, until tonight. He's coming back. No Kenny Omega. No CM Punk. No Bryan Danielson. And specifically, like, Punk and Omega being out for long periods of time. Like, they lost a ton of firepower that is going to be coming back. And look, love him or hate him, Punk matters. Punk matters, and it, like, there's a reason why CM Punk is the guy being featured on the cover of the video game that they're putting out. There's a reason why CM Punk got put in that main event spot. Like, he matters. Kenny Omega matters. These are Bryan Danielson matters. These are people that when they are back at full strength, I think it will impact the booking greatly. But I 100% agree. Stupid, like, shark cage match nonsense, like your late era WCW. No, that's got to stop. It's time for Tony to, like you said, focus on the people you have.
Yeah.
If an opportunity comes, an opportunity comes. Look, I'm not going to sit here and fault him for picking up Christian, Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Brian. I'm not going to fault him, but
I did not mean for that to come across as
But
I think that, like, him just, like, walking into fucking town thinking that he could, like, you know,
you get whoever. Like, yeah, absolutely.
It's very fair to say WWE gave up with AEW. Like, Vince is just like, whatever, they fill
that's
a
your thing. I don't care. Yeah,
that's cool. Whatever. Like, if anything, he wanted the roster to be bloated. So Tony will have a problem signing these guys to multi-million-dollar deals. And when it comes time to things, people like MJF ready for their big contract, Tony's going to nickel and dime them because he has all these other contracts on board.
Yep.
Which, look, you know, it's not going to be an issue. He'll get it done. It's just that Tony is now on alert again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But
and that's cool. Better for us, dude. Now we have fucking WWE with an injection in its ass for the first time in years. And then now we have good AEW on Wednesday nights to also talk about. So it's just a benefit for us. Let them fucking figure it out.
Yeah, listen, we don't run a business. What do we fucking care? We just want good wrestling, like you said. And it's not that, like, you should never want WWE to fail, but just imagine if WWE did fold, what happens to the talent pool? Like, unless AEW and Impact and Ring of Honor and MLW and, like, GCW all suddenly became massive, massive things. Like, if WWE folded, I don't know what wrestling in America would look like, just because you wouldn't know what to do with it. So, like, they're the demon you have to live with. They're the devil you have to live with. They exist. They're there for better or for worse. You want competition at this level because you see what happens with a monopoly. You get late 2000s WWE. It is time for Tony to either, first off, this is irrespective of WWE, but, you know, just going out on a limb, maybe if your women's division was booked better, maybe Sasha Banks would have already signed with you. Am I saying that would have happened? No. But what I am saying is that's your fault.
That's a great point, dude, because I think, like, everybody was just immediately just like, oh, cool, she's going to go there, and she's not.
No.
But here's the thing, like, to give a compliment to Tony, like, you know what works now. Like, there's no need to fucking have Dynamite be a grand show every week. Thank you for giving us that, but I don't need an iteration of Jericho and goons versus other goons in a wacky shit. And it's fun. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, shit like that is fun every now and then.
Every now and then. If every day's a party, mm-hmm. then nothing is a party.
Like, what? Like, Fyter Fest to Fight for the Fallen. 2 weeks of Fyter Fest into Fight for the Fallen. Like, what are these fucking shows?
They're nothing.
What the fuck is Fight for the Fallen,
bro? And then straight into Battle of the Belts 3, which only matters because you added Claudio versus, it's him versus Takeshita, right?
Yeah. Into fucking, Quake of the Lake.
Quake of the Lake?
They're calling their Minneapolis show Quake at the Lake.
Enough.
Which is going to be next week.
Enough. And then what? And then fucking Grand Slam happens how long after that?
Yeah,
you can't. They can't all be big shows. Please, for the love of God, can I have two women's matches on a fucking show? Is it so much to ask? You got Britt.
Also, yeah,
you got Britt Baker out here being like, you know, you guys have to do a better job of not making us the lowest rated segment. That's it. Go yell at Tony. That's Tony's fault.
Yeah, great. Yeah, yell at the fans. That's really good fucking.
Do you know why nobody cares about it? Because Tony Khan has told you to not care about it.
So, great example. Wonderful, wonderful turn last week we had with Ricky Starks becoming a face.
Great stuff.
Hook winning the FTW belt.
Great stuff.
Out of nowhere, Hobbs looking like a beast takes down Ricky Starks.
Loving it.
5 seconds later, cut to the Acclaim.
Like, and that
you
was
gotta
a,
let, you gotta let the shit breathe, bro.
And it was a 10-minute segment. It was a perfectly, it was a perfect example of how powerful a moment can be. Exactly right. You get in one fell swoop, you get Hobbs feeling like a big deal again, you've got Starks as a huge face that's over with the crowd, you get Hook with his father's title, and you get all of that in 10 minutes. It is an outstanding use of time to get three people, an entire faction essentially, over in wildly different places. And like you said, 5 seconds later, we're going to the Acclaimed. I love the Acclaimed. We love Max Caster on this show. That's, give it a few minutes. Push it a little further away.
Right. That, listen, it was just, let me rephrase myself.
No, there's nothing to rephrase. It's
cut to another segment. Like,
give it time. Give it time.
He tries to put so much shit on these shows, which I get, and I don't want a third hour, so let's not have that conversation.
Yeah, I would rather you add a second hour to Rampage if you were going to do that.
But he could have just done everything that he could, like just give like another 10 seconds of Hobbs just doing
just
this.
Just staring. Cut to Tony commercial.
Tony Schiavone, you're just like, what the fuck? Like, I got to get out of here. Like,
stare,
I mean?
Stare and cut to commercial. Perfect. Yeah. Fine. Come right back. Instead of every fucking match having a commercial. Anyway, so this matters for AEW in that respect that, like, NXT Black and Gold is now going to be, the spirit of that is going to be represented on the main roster with infinitely more resources and a guy who that particular crowd loved to work for and appreciated. Same with Shawn Michaels. So you don't get that anymore. This is also a big deal for every other company. So for Ring of Honor, right? Ring of Honor had Death Before Dishonor, which had FTR and the Briscoes running it back in a 2 out of 3 falls match that was arguably better than the first match. Another instant classic. You had a very strange main event between Claudio and Jonathan Gresham, which I feel bad for Jonathan Gresham. I think he's unfairly clowned. However, Claudio is Ring of Honor champion, and that's cool. Yeah, it's the blow-off of Samoa Joe, Jay Lethal. And most importantly for Ring of Honor, I think they said it did like 32,000 buys or some shit, which was like the fourth... it was the largest Ring of Honor event that wasn't held on a WrestleMania weekend. So, like, the acquisition is working. And what Tony's doing in Ring of Honor is working. So now it's time for Ring of Honor to become its own thing. Start to get some of that bloat reduced. Let Ring of Honor come back the way it should be. Impact's doing its thing. Impact's doing just fine. So what it means overall for the wrestling landscape is you want to keep your talent in any of these places. WWE was always a threat. But now there's less of a chance that you're going to be squandered from a lot of talent's perspective, which means you're not necessarily going to get the splashy signings you were expecting to get. Especially in Tony Khan's case, but same with Ring of Honor, with Impact, with GCW, with any of these places. And it also means that the indies aren't going to be just a feeder for AEW like they have been for the last couple of years, like PWG was for NXT. Now there's competition. Do we think...
Yeah, but like I said, maybe that's a good thing, you know?
It's not a bad thing. Like, as you don't want one thing at the top forever. And Tony Khan really does need to get some of his shit together. I don't think he needs to, like, get rid of, you know, give up the book. But some stuff's got to change around. We can't just be like doing Tony Khan plays with his action figures in his toy box anymore. It's like, we need to go back to what made AEW feel so fresh and what they continue to excel at, not just long-term storytelling, but good mid-card booking. I understand the bloat issue, but honestly, I'm excited for a Trios title. I love Trios titles, and AEW needs it probably more than any other company.
Yeah, they just, like, I'm not 100% down with Trios.
You gotta see how it's gonna look.
Yeah, I know. I don't like. It's just I don't want them to suffer from fucking WWE. It's like, let's just throw these three guys together for the hell of it. Like,
no, no, no. You want it to mean something. You want it to mean like this is one of the top factions. And
also, yeah, I guess if they treat it as a faction belt as opposed to a tag team belt,
that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, you're more familiar with Trios history than I am. I just think AEW's tag team division is really fucking good. I don't want it to suffer, you know?
No, it is, but there are certain trios that are naturally existing in AEW that make sense. Like the Lucha Bros and Pac, Death Triangle. That's like a very mm-hmm. over trio. The Elite, Kenny and the Bucks, or Hangman and the Bucks. The Undisputed Elite with or Super Click with Cole and the Bucks. Red Undisputed Era with Cole and Red Dragon. Best Friends with Orange Cassidy, Chuck and Trent. Dark Order, either Hangman, Uno and Ten, or Hangman, Alex and Silver, some combination of them. There are a lot of trios that exist. House of Black, a lot of trios that exist naturally in AEW. And considering that it looks like they are doing what I was hoping they were going to do with the All Atlantic Championship and using it as the belt where they like highlight people from around the world, and you know, Pac gets to like have a title he can defend when he's home in Britain and go to like Rev Pro or go to Japan or somewhere. It means that that belt is not clogging up space like people were worried about. So the Trios belt can exist, you know, and it means that you don't have to feed. And especially if you do it the way that like New Japan has not always booked, and we're going to transition into the last part of talking about how this affects a potential world and, you know, ending with New Japan. They haven't always booked the never six-man titles the best, but honestly, since Chaos, Yoshihashi, Goto, and Ishii had it, it has felt much more special, and it has felt like something that you actually want to care about. House of Torture have it right now, so you're hoping that gets away from them, but, you know, it will. Actually, wait. Am I wrong? Do House of Torture have it? Oh, fuck, I gotta remember. Either way, point being that like they have treated it better, and a good trios division. I mean, look at Chikara. People loved the Chikara trios
division. The OG trios, yeah.
You know, yeah. And also didn't good trios shot. Exist either? If not in WCW, didn't it either exist in WCW or the territories before that?
Not 100% sure. I think it may be a Lucha thing.
Yeah, you might be right, because they obviously have it in like Triple A and shit. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, yes.
One closing thought I wanted to just say.
And I'm sorry. Yeah, the six man Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo do have it back. Whatever. Go on.
One thing I just want to say. Hopefully, AEW treats All Out as kind of like a light reset. I think they could do good with that. You know.
Agreed. With reports that Kenny should be coming back hopefully soon. I haven't heard anything about Punk, but his timetable was never like crazy, and people are always kind of thinking All Out would be the one that he'd come back for. They're getting ready to come back at full strength, and I agree that All Out has to be a light reset. Last week was a really great episode of Dynamite. We'll see what tonight looks like, but you know, getting Hangman back with the Bucks gives a lot of intrigue to the Buck. You know, the Elite have felt kind of out of place for a little bit, and they, you know, they got fucked. They lose Kenny, and then Adam Cole comes in, and then so like then Adam gets hurt, and you're finally gonna start seeing some coherence. So All Out does need to be a reset for them, and we're about a month away, so you know, we'll be gearing up towards that. So to transition to our final thoughts here, do we think that the simple act of Vince McMahon not being at the top anymore and WWE perhaps working in a different way, if for no reason other than like Vince's idea of wrestling is now not guiding their corporate decisions, do we think that means something for the international wrestling community, or do we think that everything will remain kind of as it is?
Everything will kind of remain as it is. I don't think... I mean... Is Triple H going to go back to start doing NXT Japan, NXT UK, whatever the fuck? I mean, like, he has NXT UK, bad example. But, like, you know, he wanted to do a worldwide NXT. Do I think NXT Black and Gold is back? Do I think... No.
No, no.
I think Triple H is just going to make the adjustments here, here, and here. We're going to witness, like, non-Vince bullshit, like ripping up a script for a show 2 hours prior. Just little things like that. I don't think the game is going to be necessarily dramatically changed.
Huh.
I think
you said the game.
Damn.
What was that? What was that?
Time to play the game.
Oh, you're trying to do the opening note to the game.
Time to, what is that, a B flat?
Bam. Bam. C sharp, maybe? Whatever, we're not here to check my pitch.
What do you think?
Well, more what I mean is not like, are we suddenly going to get NXT Japan and everything, but more that... All right, so these are total presumptions I'm making here, okay? Mm-hmm. This is not based on, you know, anything factual, but the thinking for a long time was that a reason why Vince never got a foothold in Japan was for several reasons. One was that Vince just didn't really understand Japan as a wrestling, like, country. He didn't really understand, like, how their promotions work or how they... You know, he thought that he could kind of just do what worked here and bring it over there without realizing that, like, even All Japan, which was the most American-feeling promotion, was still, like... You can't compare, like, Misawa versus Kawada to anything that happened in the NWA just because, like, does it feel maybe similar to something that would have happened? Harley Race or, you know, Tully versus Dusty. Sure, it had fingerprints, but it was still totally different. So the rumblings were that, like, Vince never really understood what makes wrestling work in Japan, and also that, you know, it was very... You know, Vince would want to come in and take over. He wasn't interested in doing anything but that. So why would New Japan or All Japan or Noah or any of them work with him? But the rumblings were that when they were thinking of acquiring a Japanese company, that it was going to be Noah or All Japan. So what I'm thinking more is kind of similar to how the New Japan AEW relationship thawed when Harold Mage left and Obari came in. Do we think that Stephanie and Nick Khan being the people at the top now changes the possibility of an actual working relationship with any of the companies in Japan? As far as I know, there's no, like, longstanding bad blood, and New Japan, like, Kevin Kelly will mention WWE by name. So that's really what I'm curious about.
Here's the thing. That's a great thing that you brought up. Would New Japan work with WWE?
I see no reason why they wouldn't, as long as, like...
I mean, if Triple H were to theoretically... I would love for them to work with All Japan, but is All Japan a household name, A, in America? Not really.
You would do Noah for, like, the Muda angle, right, if anything.
I'm curious to see if Triple H and Stephanie work something out where they acknowledge AEW and they realize it's there and they work with Impact, or they, you know, NXT has a Ring of Honor show. Is that going to happen?
Yeah. So I think that Tony Khan has been, maybe not, I think he's been fairly transparent that at least in theory, it's something he'd be open to. And I think that Triple H had made mention to, like, that they're open to work with anybody. From a Japanese standpoint, you know, obviously loyalty matters greatly to their business culture. So, like, would New Japan feel that working with WWE while they have a relationship with AEW, like, would that be appropriate? Like, and that's its own, like, I don't live in Japan and it's not appropriate for
I think only
me,
Tony
a fucking
cool
Gaijin. I'm not a Gaijin. I don't live there. It wouldn't be appropriate for me, some white American dude who likes wrestling, to try to speculate on Japanese business culture. But
I'd like, be like, Tony, are you okay with this? And if Tony was like, yeah, okay, as long as you guys come back here, you know?
Yeah.
When Tony was asked that question, he had to view it with the lens of like, yeah, dude, like, if Vince is there, this isn't going to fucking happen.
Yeah, but just why would I talk about it? It's not going to happen.
Don't think he's not thinking about it.
Anything that would make these companies bigger, they would do. Yeah, and indisputably, of course, dude, working with WWE is bigger.
That's the name of the game. As long as they don't try to... As long as this goes for both sides too, you know, as long as they're able to fucking say, hey, like, this guy's got to win, this guy's got to go over, you know, as long as you don't like, because I can see Vince like, all WWE guys got to go over.
That's really what I'm talking about, is that, like, Vince McMahon was, at least from this crop here, this era, Vince was the last guy from the territories, and he was the guy that killed the territories. And so Vince is going to be coming with that very old school, like, this is, being that he's the guy that killed the territories, he's not like, oh, let's, like, you know, it's good for your champion to come over here. He's like, no, it's its own entity. Don't fucking look at me. I own you. So the fact that he's no longer the guy at the top means that, look, Nick Khan's a money guy. If he sees money in something, he's going to reach out, just like how they reached out to New Japan when Vince was still in charge. But that seemed to be spearheaded by Nick Khan and because of Bryan Danielson. So I think it's a definite possibility. I think that, I mean, look, Britt Rest never really recovered from, like, speaking out in NXT UK. So, but we'll see what happens. And, you know, wrestling,
I think people are going to start remembering NXT UK now that Triple H is back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely possible. But with Regal being in AEW, whatever. Anyway, it's all speculative. The point is, it is obviously a seismic change, and it's going to have many, 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 many ripple effects. And we've prattled on about it long enough, and we want to keep it a little short for folks tonight. So to quickly transition, and I say quickly, I know usually when it's time for Damian to talk about New Japan, it's like everybody strap in and wait for 45 minutes. But the reality is, Papa just has not had the ability to dive into the G1 the way that he has been able to in years prior.
30 seconds, Damien. You have 30 seconds to discuss G1 right now. And
New Japan, good. Breeze with the switchblade. Drop mic.
All right, folks. Well, that's okay. Let's talk about this.
Real briefly. We are at the halfway point of the G1 climax. G1 climax 32. The first one in a couple of years to feature a proper Gaijin presence, and more importantly, the first four-block G1. We didn't do our usual setup, but basically, instead of having your two blocks of nine, we now have four blocks of, I want to say six. I'm going to pull up the update here. One, two, three. Yeah,
Seven.
Four blocks of seven. So the blocks are larger, but split up more. All right. So just to give you guys, the guys and gals, the context of who we're talking about, the A block, G1 31 winner Kazuchika Okada, Toru Yano, Filthy Tom Lawler making his Japanese debut after being on Strong and being the first New Japan Strong champion. Jonah, the former Bronson Reed, also his Japanese debut. Jeff Cobb in, I think, his second G1. The return of Lance Archer after his extremely successful farewell G1 tour 2-3 years ago prior to joining AEW. And the underboss of Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale. The B block, perennial MVP of the G1, Tomohiro Ishii. The newest member of Hantai, which is Hiroshi Tanahashi's, like, the New Japan Army faction, Tama Tonga, the Cold Skull Sonata, the Emperor himself, Taichi, the Great Okan, reigning IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, Jay White, and the Crown Jewel Chase Owens. C block, the Galactic Ace Hiroshi Tanahashi, the always a bridesmaid, never a bride Hirooki Goto, Tetsuya Naito, who was broken by Zack Sabre Jr. last year, Zack Sabre Jr., who broke Tetsuya Naito last year, the first ever G1 for Aaron Henare, the return of Kenta, and Evil. And in the D block, Yoshihashi, David Finlay in his first ever G1, the Rampage Dragon himself, Shingo Takagi, Will Ospreay, rock hard Juice Robinson in his first G1 as a member of Bullet Club, El Fantasmo fighting in the G1 for the first time ever and perhaps signifying his permanent move to heavyweight status, and Yujiro Takahashi. So just looking at it, right, pretty well-developed blocks for the most part. The A block is like the heavies block. The B block has Jay and like a lot of technical guys. Same with the C block in like Goto and Naito and ZSJ and Kenta. And then the D block, kind of a coin flip of like a lot of people doing it for the first time. And then stalwarts like Shingo and Will Ospreay. So through the halfway mark, all right, for the A block, undefeated and at the top is Kazuchika Okada, followed by Jeff Cobb and Bad Luck Fale at 4 points apiece. For the B block, we've got Jay White undefeated at 6 points with Tama Tonga and Sonata at 4 points right behind him. The C block, we've got a three-way tie, very interestingly, between Zack Sabre Jr., Hirooki Goto, and Hiroshi Tanahashi, who scored a massive upset win over Tetsuya Naito in a really fucking fantastic match. And in the D block, probably most shocking of all, David Finlay by himself at the top of the block with his only blemish against Yujiro of all people, with Will Ospreay right behind him. So just looking at this, Ryan, like my big thoughts coming from this is it's an interesting variety. We will see at the end of this whether the four block format works. Some things that are unfortunate about it is obviously you're getting like less, you know, you're not getting nine straight matches of Kazuchika Okada against top people. But right, the flip side is you're getting a lot of people that get to come in for the first time and actually have a shot getting out. And the way that this works is you've got 18 total dates, then a semifinals where the A block winner fights the B block winner, the C block winner fights the D block winner. And then the last date is the finals.
I love how nobody has a discernible like lead right now.
Yes, that's, you know, that's people, the thing.
A lot of people are stuck at two, like just for to be at a midpoint standing right now. You know, obviously you have Jay White at six, you have Okada at six,
and Finlay at six.
And Finlay at six was a surprise as hell. Like, you knew they always do a good job at like trying to give someone the rub during G1 season.
Well, his first match was him beating Shingo. And then he beat Juice, and then he beat Ospreay. Like, an absolutely insane start to the G1. And I haven't seen the Ospreay match, but his match against Shingo and Juice were like the main events, and they were the matches of the night of his night. And by the way that it works is each night is one match from each block. So it is not like the A block gets a night and the B block gets a night. It's every block has one match. Anyway, though, continue.
Well, yeah, I guess at this point we got to start, you know, do you think they go all the way? I'm not going to ask you the question of is David Finlay winning the G1. How far are they going to go with David Finlay, in your opinion?
I think it is entirely possible that Finlay, inconceivable, but I think it is entirely possible David Finlay makes it out of the D block. It would be a huge upset over Ospreay. Like, Shingo's at 2 points.
No, I could totally see that. Looking at this block, man.
Shingo's at 2 points. He lost to Finlay and Juice, so he's not out of it, but it would be a tough road back with his loss to Finlay. Ospreay has only blemish against Finlay, and he has only fought ELP in a great match in Yujiro, which, like, go fuck yourself. Look, smart money, if you were to, like, at this halfway point, if you were to put a gun to my head and be like, okay, what's going to happen? It's Okada coming out of the A block. I'm going to say it's obviously Jay coming out of the B block. It's going to be, I'm going to wild card this and say Tana coming out of the C block, because the lesson schedule does work for him. 6 matches versus 9. It's nowhere near as grueling. And Ospreay coming out of the D block. I would then say Okada versus Jay for this really would be a toss up. But we'll say Okada wins so that he gets like a rematch against Jay that he probably doesn't win. So we'd say Kazuchika Okada in the finals. And then if you were getting Tana Ospreay, I think it's the 50th anniversary. Tana scores a major upset over Ospreay. The G1 final is Okada versus Tana. And then my wild card prediction, they give it to Tana. Because this has been the year of the Rainmaker and the Switchblade. Who better to represent the 50th anniversary and going into Wrestle Kingdom than Hiroshi Tanahashi? It's a huge jump, but not inconceivable.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it seems to, New Japan does a wonderful job at like making the obvious seem obvious, but then like also like, hey, we're gonna do this too. So yeah, I like what you laid out is pretty much how I think it's going to go down. But also, Kenta is not going to remain at 1 win, 2 losses.
No, neither is Shingo Takagi. Neither is Naito.
But you know, I mean, that's probably what's going to go down.
Look,
unless we get a surprise like Sonata finally winning something, you know.
Well, I could see Naito winning his last 3, giving him the tiebreaker over Zack Sabre Jr. And then Tana dropping his last 2 and ZSJ like tying with Naito, splitting the difference. I could see like that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I could easily see Shingo coming back to like the last night being between him and Ospreay for who wins the D block. I could also, there's no way Jay White doesn't make it out of the B block, but just for shits and giggles, like they could have Sonata win out if they wanted to like have a Sonata Jay White match. I don't see any way that Okada doesn't come out of the A block, so I don't think that's worth discussing. But yeah, like you said, like when it comes to the G1, they do a pretty good job of making what feels obvious not necessarily feel obvious. And the finals are always like the last block night before the finals are always super interesting. There's always 1,000 tiebreakers. And it's always super fun to listen to for the English commentary, because you basically just listen to Chris Charlton and Kevin Kelly be like, all right, so with this happening, you'd have to have these 7 things happen for this person to advance. And like, you just watch that happen throughout the night. So either way, and just what I'll say, like, so obviously, like I said, both Ryan and I have not been able to watch to the levels normally. And even me, like I've only watched about half the nights, but early MVPs, no surprise. Ishii, of course. Jay, of course. ZSJ, of course. David Finlay, a legitimate MVP. I've been so happy to see Kenta back. Tana has looked incredible. Again, his match versus Naito, arguably match of the tournament so far. Will Ospreay's match against the LP was outstanding. And Ospreay Shingo is in 3 days. So obviously that is a possible show stealer. So the quality, in my opinion, has not gone down. All right. It's a lot of wrestling. It always is. Nobody should kill themselves to watch it. But we're at the halfway mark. So I'd say, like, consider tuning in. The New Japan subreddit does a poll every night of, like, what was match of the night. So even if you want to just go to that and just look at the match of the night and watch the main event or watch whatever that was, like, the quality is still there. It's still the G1.
Totally.
So and there's nothing else to talk about with New Japan. The G1 is everything until it's over, and then you start sorting out which champions lost from there. But it's exciting stuff. I always loved G1 season, and we're gonna do a better job of keeping up. So obviously tonight was dominated with the news that it would have been that it was always gonna be dominated with. But we do have a guest lined up when they're ready, and we've got a in-depth episode that Ryan and I have been keeping for a while that we are excited to do. I feel like every time I come on here, I talk about this, but that is...
No, yeah, we're sorry. We're sorry, folks. We had a little bit of a... But you know what? We earned a summer hiatus after 2 years.
Look, you're lucky we're still going, all right? You're lucky we're still giving... I'm in fucking grad school. The world's on fire. Ryan got a promotion and then a demotion and then and he's trying to stay alive. Everybody's got partners and fucking animals and you're lucky you get this at all right? So go fuck yourself. But no, we love you. We love you. We have all, you know, love all 10 of you. And we have our, you know, we have our in-depth episode that we really hopefully will be able to do next week. Oh, and before we jump to the Legend Killer and close out for tonight, just a special shout out to Bryce Donovan, making, I think, his fourth appearance on AEW Dark. Bobby Orlando made his first, and his second should be coming up soon. So Shukru taking over AEW. Bryce is still Creative Pro Champion. He is the best wrestler in the world. And also a special shout out to Rex Lawless, who, Jesus Christ, has he just gotten shredded. My God.
Oh, yeah.
He is very scary looking. He was scary before, but now he's like really, really fucking scary.
He's not afraid to fucking tell you, too.
Willow hanging out in AEW. Just good stuff. My boy Lee Moriarty.
Willow is two steps away from at least full-time Ring of Honor, if not AEW.
Yeah, she's right there.
And listen, now that I saw my boy Bobby on there, man, step by step.
Step by step.
Step by step.
FFC rules the world. Lee Moriarty getting some play. Wheeler on top of the world. We are the smartest people in the world. I wonder what's up with Nolan Edwards. Anyway, Ryan, what do you got going on for a Legend Killer tonight?
A nice simple guy for you. I have
Love
another one too.
Guy. Be simple. Yes. Everybody's favorite sex pest. The good old army boy, Vincent McMahon.
What a way to close out.
Yeah.
Do you want the other one or you want to leave with this one? Because this might be a solid one to post with.
He's a pest, but I don't know. What's the other one? Let me make a decision here. I'm calling it on the spot, Ryan.
If you get this one, I'm gonna be pissed.
I hope I get it immediately. Is it like a totally out of left field person?
It's a relevant person, but certainly does not look like this anymore.
Is that Walter?
Yeah, goddammit, fuck you. That's Walter. Looking like fat 7-Eleven Gerard Way, man.
Ha ha! You've got nothing on me. Your powers are feeble.
Was it the fact that I said it was a relevant person?
No.
If I didn't say relevant person, it doesn't look like this anymore?
No, it's because I saw the picture. I don't think we used it, but I've definitely seen it before while looking at
pictures. You know what? We did use a similar... I forgot that we did that. Okay.
But it wasn't that picture. I think we got like him in a... It was like an early wrestling picture of him.
So I saw this on Twitter. I was like, wow, Gerard Way really let himself go during the fucking the hiatus. But no, it's Walter.
Yeah, and joke's on us, obviously, because Gunther is shredded to all hell. Although somebody pointed out, I can't unsee this now, but somebody pointed out that like his arms are not proportional to how shredded the rest of him is. And now I can't unsee it. He kind of looks like a...
I mean, it looks like he lost weight more so. Like they say, like, you know, when you lose a bunch of weight, like, you get the fucking the midriff and you get, like, the fucking... If you lose weight too fast, you get sagging skin. And it doesn't look like that happened to him. And I have no fucking authorization to be commenting on another man's body, especially Walter.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me.
But it looks like he lost a little weight a little too fast.
Well, realistically, I think what it is that Walter, because we don't respect Gunther, dead naming you, sorry, cheap. Walter was always absurdly strong, and so he probably focused more on, like, cardio and conditioning than he did on strength, because he wasn't going to lose his strength. but he wanted to increase his like mobility and longevity. So he probably focused on something where like, so now he looks shredded, but his arms didn't get proportionally bigger because he just, it wasn't something he needed to prioritize. Like I said, I'm not his fucking personal trainer. He looks incredible either way. It's just, I just thought it was funny that somebody pointed out that his arms are like the same while the rest of him got significantly more toned, and it was kind of funny. But he's obviously absolutely phenomenal shape, and he probably extended his career by like 10 years easy by pushing off all that weight. Not that he was like some high flyer, but just look, wrestling's grueling, and he's in WWE, and they work a fucking lot, and he obviously did wonders for himself, and I can't wait for him to be at the top of the card in WWE. That's probably the thing I'm most excited about. I think he'd be a Vince guy either way, but I'm excited to see him.
Where's Dragunov?
He's injured. He had to relinquish the NXT UK championship a couple of weeks ago. I don't know, he like fucked up his shoulder or some shit, but yeah, he had to relinquish.
I'm excited to see when he finally comes over.
Yeah, I'd like to see him on the main roster as well. And of course, you got Clash at the Castle coming up. It's really unfortunate that Becky has like a separated, she like separated shoulder or some shit. So that's unfortunate. But you're gonna get Drew versus Roman, and you're gonna get that September 3rd. I actually think it's the same weekend as All Out, or right around there. So.
Shout out to fucking Bobby, dude. He's fucking killing it right now.
Oh, well, look, man. Drew, first off, Drew, like, being this over still, I'm happy about. And he spent enough time. Ryan and I have beat this to death. He spent more than enough time away from the top. I am 100%.
Maybe he knows better than us, dude. Maybe him just fucking riding the laurels for like a year was like the best thing that he ever decided
absolutely, because,
to do.
Because like the crowd's still red hot for him. And I am perfectly happy with, listen, he's only fought Roman once in the last like 4 years, and their Survivor Series match was really fucking good. So I'm fully ready for that as a feud. If he doesn't win it there. So happy to see Bobby over. Bobby has put in the work. Look, he's never going to be the best promo in the world, but he is definitely leaps and bounds better. He doesn't necessarily. And when you look like that, you don't. It talks for itself. He's still fucking quality.
It's a rare thing for WWE. Like, every now and then this happens, but WWE fans will be like sentient enough to like take this guy
sentient like they're fucking algae. No,
like they realize like they'll take like not take him under their wing. That's a bad analogy, but like it's like. Like we like good like Bobby like fucking awesome like you know what I mean like finally like we like,
he was awesome in
do...
his first run he was awesome in yeah. TNA he's awesome now but no I agree like the fans maybe not often but you love when the fans get behind somebody that deserves it and they put in the work and the company doesn't get in the way of that and goes all right fine
and it's just a natural synergy like Bobby ever since he's been getting the love has been fucking. Increasing his work rate tenfold, like you know what I mean.
And the U.S. Championship and Intercontinental Championships becoming more relevant is like the best thing that could happen. Now you've got Gunther as current champion. You've got Bobby as U.S. champion. This is the best case scenario.
I'm still here, by the way. So
yeah, I see you. No, it's fine. But we're wrapping up anyway. So point being, we'll see where things go from here. We appreciate patience and love as always for sticking with us. We will try to repay that in kind. And look, it's the first time in a while where maybe there's some reason to be optimistic about WWE. I don't like hating WWE. I would prefer that it be good so that like we can just have good wrestling and just be happy for the people that dedicate their lives and bust their fucking asses and break bones and fucking tear limbs just so we can chant this is awesome right. Which to be clear this podcast does not endorse this is awesome chants they are not awesome but regardless instead of a what are you listening to I would prefer that we just go ahead and plug something for a friend of the podcast and a good friend of ours. So, Ryan, why don't you lead us out with that?
So very good friend, brother, just a hero of mine, Nick Lee of Moontooth, has befallen himself in very dire straits right now. I want to be clear that there are paths forward established for treatment for him right now, but right now he is in the hospital, just fucking going through hell right now. And you know, I don't want to scare anybody, but he's fighting like hell. And you know, like I said, there is a path forward. Can't really get into too many details of what's going on because we're not 100% sure of what's going on. But all,
and it's
really
not our
to
place.
Know,
you'll get information,
right?
From
exactly,
the relevant sources.
That too. You'll get exactly. You get the information from the correct sources that will give it to us. But all you need to know is that Nick needs our love and support right now. If you are a fan of Moontooth, if you are just a fan of metal overall, and you see the immense talent that Nick has, he is a very special individual because he is, you know, and he'd be like, shut the fuck up, man. But like, you know, he's a future in a lot of ways, and more so like, fuck, he like, his path is not fucking over, and it's not going to be fucking over. So if you can, Damien and I will be posting the GoFundMe link in our story.
Have posted. Yeah, we will repost it when this drops, but okay, it is pinned to our Twitter profile.
There's no correct amount. If you could just give $1, if you could give $5, $10, or whatever you feel comfortable giving, he can use it all right now. So, I love you, brother, and I hope fucking you get out of there soon and get back onto the path that you are meant to live, because this bump in the road is not going to define you, and it's certainly not going to hold you back.
Yeah, for me, Ryan has known Vin, John, Ray, and Nick a whole hell of a lot longer than me. However, I've had the privilege of, you know, meeting, talking, and hanging out with all of them, having a beer with all of them, and they're all great. But Nick, for me as a guitar player, and I have no shame in saying this, and, you know, I basically tell Nick this every time I see him, which is, you know, obviously, frankly, embarrassing, but it is what it is. Nick is by far one of the most talented guitar players I've ever seen, just in general. He is, without a doubt, one of the most gifted guitar players of this generation, and he deserves every bit of accolades that he gets. And aside from his immense talent, he's just like a really, really excellent person. He's warm and he's friendly, and I've just always had a blast hanging out with him, and, you know, feel lucky to be able to pick his brain about music or, you know, just anything. So the good news, if there is good news, I suppose, to be gleaned from any of this, is that the goal of 75,000, they've far exceeded. But look, this is America. This country is fucking horseshit. And we don't know what's on the other side for Nick yet. So, like Ryan said, if you're able to, awesome. If not, if you're even able to just share it, if you're able to, you know, give it to the right people. But we're all here for the Tooth Boys. We're all sending everything we got. And, you know, we look forward to when we're able to have a beer with Nick again. And more importantly, you know, see him back on a stage. So, you know, like, amen. a little dour note to end on. But look, this is the shit that's important in life. And the outpouring of support's been awesome to see. And we know he'll get through it. So, like I said, this is pinned to our profile on Twitter, but we will share it again in our stories when this episode drops. It's on GoFundMe. If you type in GoFundMe, Nick Lee, into Google, it'll come up. And, yeah, you know, speedy recovery, brother. So, anyway, to end, we will catch you all very soon. So, for Ryan, for myself, this has been the most electrifying, must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. This has been FFC.